This is from Ajahn Sumedho. We are prone to having blind attachments. Say you're locked up in a foul-smelly prison cell, and the Buddha comes and says, "Here's the key. All you have to do is take it and put it in the hole there underneath the door handle. Turn it to the right, open the door, walk out, and you're free." But you might be so used to being locked up in jail that you don't quite understand the directions. So you say, "Oh, the Lord has given me this key," and you hang it on the wall and you pray to it every day. That might make your stay in prison a little more happy. You might be able to endure all the hardships, the foul smell of your prison cell a little better, but you're still in the prison cell. You haven't understood that it wasn't the key itself that was going to save you. Due to lack of intelligence and understanding, you grasp the key blindly. That's what happens in all religions. We just grasp the key to worship it, pray to it, but we don't actually learn to use it.
Sadhu,
isn't that amazing? It's like this. So we're stuck in jail. But if we're aware of being stuck in jail, then we're not stuck in jail. But to live with awareness is what it's all about. And I can't be aware for you, and you can't be aware for me. But in family life, when there's a few people and awareness going on together, or Sangha life, monastic community, it's like a spiritual family. And we're like cameras. We all see different parts of the whole thing. So we're putting the key into action. If I lived alone, I wouldn't learn not even a quarter, not even a fifth, not even a tenth of what I learn living with spiritual companions, because I watch them and they watch me. It's kind of like a Tesla, you know. There's cameras everywhere. And you can't get away with too much. You can still get away with a big ego. That's the one danger, especially if you're in a position of any authority. And again, this is the danger of having power, wearing a robe, living in a community, and people come and they want to feed you, they want to give you things. And the ego starts to rule. And it's very dangerous because you can feel entitled, like they should. People should come and give. And yesterday I was listening to a Dhamma talk. I just happened to come upon this Tibetan Lama, 32, identified as the reincarnation of Kala Rinpoche. And they have these special detective Lamas who go around and discover that child, according to the prophecy, is the new Kala Rinpoche. So I thought, he's so young, he couldn't have any wisdom. But the talk that he gave was so good. He kept saying, if you have no awareness, it's not going to work. And then he was so humble. And he said, I'm supposed to be the reincarnation of Kala Rinpoche. But then he started talking about his faults and the problems that he has. And I just thought, this is so good for the new generation. Here's somebody young, perfect English, beautiful English. And he kept saying, no guru is going to do it for you. You have to do this yourself. And he said, I learned so much since I was a kid, but I can't do it just by reading or I have to practice. If I don't practice, I'm not going to. He just kept saying very basic, practical things that people should hear. And I thought, so good for the future generation or for Dhamma that there's young people like that who are in a very high position. The specialness of being a monastic can be a great hindrance because people put you up on a throne. So we have to be very wise that we don't get caught up with the ego that thinks it's so special, and that we have to give Dhamma talks as if we know the truth and no one else knows it. Because this is not the point. We're just another vehicle on the road. It might have a fancy dress. It might have a very special parking lot or garage to live in. And it gets treated different because it has a name, Daughters of the Buddha or whatever. But in fact, we're just human beings born, get old, get sick, and die. We're not special. And everything that we do on this planet is not to dress up the ego, but in fact, it's to overcome this ego, to know it, to be aware of it, and to dress it down. Maybe some people want to run away with their role as being in robes. They want to go into isolation, but they've been labeled as this, and this is their karma. So they have to work with it. I contemplated how wonderful it was when I was in New Zealand. I was so hidden. The people on the street, at least one of them, wouldn't talk to me, looked at me like some horrible thing. But coming back to Canada and being in a monastery and people are always wanting to take care of you and help you and be nice to you. Of course, now I do need a little more help. But there's always the ego that climbs on top. And it's actually nature trying to teach us through old age, sickness, and death that, no, this is all just a dream. You better wake up from the dream before you die, because are you going to get another chance? You don't know. So we have the key, and yet we put it on the shelf. I have, I don't know how many shrines in my kuti. These are just photographs. This is not the real practice. This is just a dress. It's a costume. It's not the real practice. We can say, well, I'm a renunciant. I keep this many precepts, and people go, oh, that many precepts. But to be honest, the precepts really keep me. The precepts are not something to hang up like a key on the wall, but we have to use them to restrain, to guard the mind, to even guard not just the mind like speech and action, but thoughts. And in Theravada, there are no precepts about thoughts. But if we practice the Dhamma, we realize that at the root of our speech and action is thought. Whatever kind of habitual thoughts we have, I'm great or I'm horrible. I'm middle, I'm neither. I don't know what I am. Those kind of thoughts, we may not be conscious of it, but they help to establish this ego more and more. It's like, we make a garage for it, then we polish it, we dress it up. We want people to see our beautiful car, our nice new robes. Somebody got us all these new things. Now we mix them all up. Is that mine or yours? Because they all look the same. These things are not so important, but the internal workings, and that's why this Dhamma practice is so important because it helps us reflect on how we're doing in here. And as a community, it's like we have four huge cameras, our own camera and three others, and we watch out for each other. So it's very useful to live with people who practice and who have a critical eye. Maybe sometimes we get upset because they're so critical, but I'm so glad they're so critical, because if they weren't keeping an eye on me, I'd be out to lunch maybe. I would not notice how unmindful I can be. And if I'm not mindful enough within, at least we have stoppers very close to us. And as women, I have to say, I think our intuition key might be a little more alert than some of the others. Maybe because of our native biological suffering and all that stuff. I don't know what it is. But they can seem to smell you. No, I don't mean because of the very powerful nose. But that's good. Oh, I forgot to wash. Well, sometimes we don't wash very often if we're not sweating. But in the Vinaya, actually, in the area around where the Buddha taught in the Ganges Valley, the monastics washed once in 2 weeks to keep clean. A cleanliness, how you take care of your body, but not to shower every day. That's a luxury. So it's more of a being basic and being able to, maybe we learn that, see how the body can smell. And you don't dress yourself up to smell glorious because you want to impress everyone. Or even ourselves, our basic tolerance. We're fine to go around with a smelly mind and have wrong speech or be authoritarian or boss people around or take things without, not keep those precepts or get drunk or what people do in their life, which is very dangerous even. Then they get in a car and drive when they're drunk. People go to such extremes with not taking care of themselves or each other. They just don't care. So the Buddha was emphasizing care of the mind, washing the mind every day. That's care of the mind, watching the mind every day. It's a difficult thing to do. But when we watch each other, and it's difficult, sometimes there are tears, but we have to do it, because if we're not watching out for each other, how are we going to care for the mind? How are we going to learn more deeply? We have blind spots. And then when someone close to us dies, it's like, why? Or practice the Dhamma, reflect on the Dhamma, reflect on our own condition. I remember many stages of my life at this time. I reflect back, especially with younger people present. I try to remember what I was like when I was their age. And I feel grateful. I wish I had been in robes when I was six. In Burma, the kids, they're 6 years old and they have Dhamma camp. They shave their heads and the kids go into this three-month Dhamma training. Yeah, Sayadaw, one day I was walking meditation and outside this room, and he said there was a class of little boys. He said, there's an arahant in there. I was so nervous to be walking outside the door, and there was a little boy that was already an arahant. It was so pure. Such a good kama. when the mind is so pure and you sit down to meditate, and so easily you could gain the path. But that's a special good karma. So we have been trained in very poor ways, some of us, and some better. But if we stop owning all that and feeling sorry for ourselves because of that, and making the ego even fatter than it already is, if we can let all that burden go, little by little, it doesn't just fall away, but be able to reflect on what are we? Truly, what is this? And see that it's just a vehicle. Four wheels. It's no better than any other car on the road. It's not better, it's not worse. It's just a vehicle. But to use this vehicle and to use the mental abilities, the skills of this awareness, to be aware of what we truly are, of this practice of being in the present moment and knowing the truth of what we are, then we have a chance to free ourselves from all the dressing up and all the prison that we're creating for ourselves with this ignorant mind. So to purify the mind is a big job. It's like taking the whole car apart and seeing that it's actually empty. There's nothing there except bolts and pieces of metal, wires and things. Pipes, I don't know. And then gas. And I think sometimes I contemplate the power of metta, karuna, mudita, upeka. And it seems that those brahmaviharas are like the fuel in our tank. Of course, there are a lot of other ingredients in that fuel. This Dhamma is a package of qualities, attributes, and skills that we learn to realize what we're learning. Because what we're learning is really what we are already. It's nothing, it's like getting undressed and knowing the truth. It's a fire. It's not a fire like an element, but it is a burning away of impurity. And then when the burning is finished, there's nothing there. It is finished. There's no one. There's nothing that we get out of this, because there's nothing to start with and there's nothing to finish with. We just come back to that. That purity is all. And the awareness of that is awareness itself. It's that there, what we strive so hard to find, to identify, to know, to be, we already are that. It's so simple, but we can't even speak about. But we make a big fuss because the key is on the wall and we worship the whole confabulation, whatever that means. The whole creation that we keep creating and recreating, make it better. Of course, we want it to be clean, but sometimes I want to take down all the shrines and have nothing, just nothing. But we can't, because the nothing is not on the outside. It's not about doing something with the outside. It's undressing everything internally. The shrine is in here. And we don't have to ever do anything to that, because it's there already. There's nothing to create, or to make, or to do. Just to be aware of that.
Sanatana.